Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We're positively getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We'll have the Pac-Man Scratch Offs to give away from our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Always reminding you to do this stuff responsibly, especially with all this baseball gambling going on and sports wagering as we get into Memorial Day weekend. We're going to have some greatest hits here this weekend. I don't know what we're doing. I've been on the road this week. The Orioles have been getting swept this week, and the Ravens have been opening up the OTAs. You know, I skipped these OTAs, and Chad Steele took my press pass. I hope you've made it out there this week, Luke, on our behalf. Nothing really happens this time of year, right? Install, young guys figuring out where they're going to be, veterans showing up, which is always a good sign. You know, anytime Ray Lewis wasn't around, or John Ogden, who I saw at the pool the other day. By the way, Adelis Thomas hung out for a little bit this weekend. I saw Chris McAllister. So the Vegas Maryland party, and big shout out to Howard Perlow and everybody who makes that event happen every year, and Bill Cole from Cole Roofing for taking me out to Las Vegas. There was a little purple at the pool. I got to catch up with C-Mac, dog.
Very cool. I mean, you just named two of my favorite players from that era. Adelis Thomas.
Who are they? I named three. Who are your two favorites?
Adelis Thomas and, look, Chris McAllister. I was a corner through high school. I wasn't very good. Let's be very clear about this.
He had better hips than you.
Chris McAllister, corner, and number 21 was my favorite number as well. So, you know, plenty of respect for C-Mac. But Adelis Thomas
looks like
guy.
He can still play. Adelis came into our thing, sat for an hour and a half. We talked about Dave Sadeghi and his restaurants. He got a place down in Columbia, like all that. But Adelis still looks physically like he's at playing weight and could go out there and, you know, and run as a linebacker, literally.
Yeah, very cool. Look, we all, in all of our different eras of fandom and ages, I mean, everyone my age loved Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, of course, right? But Rob Burnett from the 2000 team, and Adelis Thomas, they were two of my guys that maybe my friends wouldn't talk about and say, these guys can play football. So good
you
to hear that
Rob
Adelis
Burnett.
Is doing well.
I've known you 20 years and you've never admitted that to me.
No, I've mentioned that before. I mean, I think Rob Burnett's 2000 season, which I think he was an all-pro that year but didn't make the Pro Bowl.
I have a picture of him
underrated,
holding
one of the
a grass
most underrated
skirt out at the barn. We bought him a grass skirt. Steve Hennessy
cool.
went out and bought him a grass skirt because he didn't make the Pro Bowl.
Right.
And we have
right.
a picture of him holding the man, Rob Burnett was the first Raven I ever met. So Eric Turner was the Rob Burnett was the first Raven I ever met. And then and Michael Jackson and then Eric Turner. But here we are all these years later, a little football, you know, on the brain. And now that I know you like the Rob Burnett thing, I did a podcast that we're going to run here the second that Martin Knott gets it over to me. It's called He's Holy, I'm Not. It's Reverend Al Hathaway and Martin Knott do this podcast. And they had me on their show in Vegas for like an hour. Like we just sat. I was sitting there baking. It was hot. We're under this big tent by the pool. And the Rev asked me a question that I don't know that I've ever been asked before. He said, who's your favorite Oriole? And I was like, I just said, Alan Mills. I don't know how, you know, I didn't think about anything. I said, Alan Mills. And he was like, well, that's an obscure, I was going to say Tom Chopin, but yeah. I didn't. But that's, you know, that's a question I don't get asked very often. And I don't know who's my all-time favorite Raven. Rob Woodson, maybe. I would say Mike Flynn or somebody that I'm friends with or something like that. But I don't get asked that very often, you know.
I think it's important as a fan, and I'm saying this way more as Luke the fan years and years ago, not the guy who's been covering the team for over
not
a
not the guy who's had
now
to deal with Marlon Humphrey. Right.
No, but
and Terrell Suggs. I always he's a charmer too.
Even as a youngster, I always thought it was important to have a couple players in your bag in terms of favorite players that not everyone else would know. It gives you some street cred as a fan, right? I mean, I use this one all the time. One of my favorite Orioles growing up. I mean, everyone in my generation loved Cal. So Cal was first. Eddie Murray and Cal were 1 and 1A for me. But Randy Milligan, one of my all-time favorite Orioles.
The Moose.
We'll look at the career on base percentage. This guy was undervalued for what he was.
I had him in Stratomatic. He walked a lot.
He walked a ton. So Randy Milligan, that's my –
he was on my 1988-89 Stratomatic team with Mike Schilling and John Rapp. We used to roll the – blow on the dice, you know, Tomcat. All right, let's get some football in here because OTAs, you went out, baseball, you know, with the way the Orioles have played this week. Look, the football team can't lose right now. I mean, right. What is your – and we're not even going to belabor this. What's on your mind right now with the football team?
I think the biggest thing beyond the, okay, everyone stays healthy, right? And Lamar was there, and a lot of the veteran players were there. There were more veteran players there than not. I thought Ronnie Stanley being there was interesting, and I even wrote about that earlier this week. But for me, it's the offensive line, and it is not who's lining up there right now. They're going to defer to veteran players. You're going to see Daniel Falele at right tackle for right now. You're going to see Josh Jones, the veteran they acquired from the, you know, they signed away from the Texans, who, you know, can play some left tackle, can play some left guard, can play some right guard in a pinch. I think he's going to be the first guy you see at left guard, but who's lining up where? And that's not to say that anything we see right now will determine anything. I'll remind everyone that Big Sala, you know, Sala Amuavailalu, the sixth-round rookie last year.
Don't say that three times real fast. We're working
right
on it. Hey, I can't believe you got through it once. I'm standing and applauding with that.
I worked on that all offseason last year, and yet he didn't play a single snap as a rookie. But he was the starting left guard this time last year. So that's a reminder of none of that really matters right now. But it does get – you get a glimpse at least where the coaches are thinking right now. I mean, the offensive line is – I mean, it's the headline right now. I mean, we know this team's talented. We know this team, barring an injury to Lamar Jackson, is going to be right in the thick of things, even if they're not leading the NFL in, you know, point differential and the best record in the league again. They're going to be there if Lamar's healthy and upright. But how do you keep Lamar healthy and upright? Your offensive line's going to play a major role in that. So that's where I am really interested. That's why, you know, I thought it was good to see Ronnie Stanley at OTAs. This is a huge year for him. Not just in the context of him as a Raven, but his career. You know, he's in a contract year now with the way they redid his deal and cut his pay, and they voided the last year of the deal. He's playing for money, whether it's with the Ravens or someone else. So big year for him. Linderbaum's the only known commodity you have on that offensive line right now. He's the only guy right now where I say, yes, I feel fully confident that Tyler Linderbaum's going to play at a high level. Barring a freak kind of injury that can happen to anyone, I expect him to be out there every week, and he's going to play at a high level. So beyond that, who knows what's going to happen? So, you know, they're hoping Ben Cleveland's going to be the right guard. You know, they're hoping that Roger Rosengarten, the second round pick, will eventually seize the job, maybe by training camp. You know, right now he's running with the second team, but you know, who's lining up where? And look, it's not full contact right now. We know that. Anyone who's covered this knows that OTAs right now, the observations are fun, but they don't mean anything. I mean, they really don't. And the veteran players, they're not really out there competing against anyone except themselves. They're getting themselves ready. Young guys, that's a different story. Young guys are trying to make their mark, especially undrafted rookies that are trying to crack the 53-man roster. So it's always interesting this time of year in that regard. To kind of see the varying levels of competitiveness, but at the same time, you know, this is a team that, you know, we know that they're going to be really good, but offensive line, what's Zach Gore, you know, what fingerprints does he put on this defense? Kyle Hamilton alluded to it that, you know, it'll be a little bit different, but it's still the Ravens system. You know, it's not going to change drastically. So, you know, there are going to be some hiccups there. I mean, there were with Mike McDonald a couple years ago. So, you know, but beyond that, it's keep everyone healthy, keep everyone upright, keep everything in order to accomplish the goals you want to accomplish. Because let's face it, Nestor, and we're going to talk about it. We'll talk about the training camp. We'll talk about the regular season. Everything points to January. Anything that happens right now, Derrick Henry looks great. He's huge. Guy's a massive human being to see up close in person. I mean, that was another takeaway from the first OTA earlier this week. But you know, at the same time, I'm not really interested in what Derrick Henry does statistically in the regular season. For me, and you know how I felt about giving money to any running back, let alone Derrick Henry, is he going to help you win games in January? That's all that matters. January is all that matters for this football team right now. So through that lens, yeah, nothing that's happening right now is all that important, but it's just one step in a very long journey to try to get back to the AFC Championship game and get over the hump this time around. Long, long, long path to getting back to that point, but it starts now. And yeah, so far so good. Good veteran turnout. You know, by all accounts, John Harbaugh was pleased with what he saw, at least on Wednesday when we were out there. So you know, we'll see how this unfolds these next few weeks. But you know, nothing to report of big concern. You know, just the major interest for me being what is that offensive line looking like, and how's that going to evolve here over the next few months?
Kyle Hamilton spoke this week as a leader, right? Like, they put Lamar on the podium. Used to be a day where, you know, Ray Lewis is going to speak today. Ed Reed's going to speak today. Suggs, you know, then Flacco's era came, and there's star players. This OTA thing is, you know, Chad Steele likes to roll out the stars at this point. You only have access once a week for a couple of weeks, and then we have our little mini camp coming up in 3 weeks. Kyle Hamilton as star of the defense, and what we saw last year indicates that he's a special, different kind of player in a way that I don't know that we've had a player like him. So maybe Ed Reed, but he was more traditional. The star power of Kyle Hamilton, who at some point is going to make a lot of money here, right? He's becoming not a leader, but almost the leader, right? Especially as the Stanleys Marlon Humphrey's not really that guy. The older guys, he's the next level at this thing.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget about Roquan Smith, even though, you know, he's not the homegrown drafted Raven, but certainly Roquan is still the leader of the defense. But I think Kyle Hamilton's absolutely emerging in that role. I mean, it comes down to this, and we talk about this a lot. Your leaders don't necessarily have to be the best player on the team, but they've got to be up there, right? The 50th best player on the roster is not really leading a whole lot. Maybe on special teams, you know, maybe in some intricate ways. But for the most part, you need your leaders to be your best players. And I think Kyle Hamilton is absolutely stepping into that role. He was asked about Nate Wiggins, you know, their first round pick, who is going to play. I don't know if he's going to start. I mean, you have Marlon Humphrey and Brandon Stevens, you know, week one look like they're going to be your starting corners in the base defense, but, you know, Wiggins will probably be playing in sub packages. You know, I think that's the expectation for a first round pick. I don't think I'm talking out of turn saying that, but Hamilton was asked about Wiggins, and keep in mind, Kyle Hamilton was a young player coming out of Notre Dame. And he made the point that he said, look, he's talented, but let's also remember this kid's 20, you know, if he gets beat, he can't even have as much as a Mike's Hard Lemonade. I mean, that was actually his reference, which I thought was an interesting choice, but I digress on that. But it was really a grounded veteran response talking about a player that is only a couple years younger than him. I mean, Kyle Hamilton's not 29 years old. I mean, he's a really young buck himself, but he carries himself in a way that I don't think Hamilton's necessarily the rah-rah kind of guy. You know, he's certainly not going to be given the big-time Ray Lewis speeches. And, you know, Roquan Smith does that.
Yeah, he doesn't have Roquan's personality in that way.
But he very much – he has a demeanor to him that he's just so – at least how he conducts himself during the week. Now, he makes a big play in the middle of a game. Is he going to show emotion? Yeah, I mean, most players do, other than Joe Flacco famously – didn't show it a whole lot, but he did. Even Joe at times would pump his fist and yell. But I think Kyle Hamilton, he's wise beyond his years. I think he comes from a good family. He's got a good high football IQ. You can tell just by the way he talks, and he breaks it down in a way that even someone who doesn't really get football on that intellectual level, I think they can understand it. And he was kind of talking through some of the, you know, not giving away any secrets, but talking through what he expects to be slightly different with Zach Orr, you know, compared to Mike McDonald. But I mean, he's a heck of a talent. And I think your point in terms of, especially homegrown, so that's where we put Roquan Smith to the side right now. You know, no disrespect to Roquan, who's been an all pro the last couple of years. But I mean, you're talking about someone who's been a first team all pro already 2 years into this thing, first team all pro safety. And he's not really a safety. He plays all over, right?
I was going to say, giving him a positions like, he doesn't really.
I mean, he can line up at linebacker. He can line up on the edge. He can line up as a box safety. He can line up in center field, even though that's probably not.
Well, he's different as a safety because he's big and physical, but even bigger than big and physical safeties, right? Like guys that we've seen that were more hitting safeties, he has a different kind of range about his body, right? His body type's different.
But he's 6'4" and 220 and can still hit like that. You know, he could still give you a Rodney Harrison like hit. Maybe not as dirty as Rodney Harrison back in the day. But the point is, he has that physicality to his game. But that's the thing. I mean, safety, both safety spots, corner, slot corner more specifically.
He's the guy you need when you want to tackle Derrick Henry.
Right. I mean, no question about it. No question. So, I mean, he's just so, his skill set is so diverse. I mean, you think about the things Ray Lewis did at a time when middle linebackers were being taken off the field on third down, and Ray was an every down linebacker, right? I mean, that now you see that not so much today, but for a long time, you saw that with regularity. And Ray was one of the earlier guys to kind of be fit that mold. Ed Reed did so many different things, and you can point to some other players in Ravens history, but Hamilton is just so dynamic. It really does feel, and I don't look, I'm not putting the guy in the Hall of Fame just yet. Let's be very clear about that. But it feels like he has that kind of ceiling to be that kind of a transcendent, multi-time All-Pro, Pro Bowl, maybe a Hall of Famer 15 years from now, right? I mean,
and he had a coordinator that liked using that. We'll see what Zach Orr can do.
And
with
I think. Right. And I think that's why, and since you mentioned that, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, I mean, they brought in Jamal Adams for a visit this week. They're looking for a third safety. I don't know if Jamal Adams is that guy because he's not that Geno Stone play in space kind of safety that I think they want that allows you to move Hamilton closer to the line of scrimmage. Cause I think that's really what he's best at doing, but you just want to be able to move him all over the place. So you need another safety with range. And frankly, I don't know who that is. I mean, Ardarius Washington, he's got to stay on the field. Let alone knowing if he can do the job. So
they're going to miss Stone, right? They're, I mean, we talked a lot back in February when guys were exiting, including Mike McDonald and other and coaches. They're going to miss some coaches, but we won't see that or know that. We see the players on the field, but how they're being used and what they can and can't do. Stone made a name for himself going to get the football and got paid and all that, but they're going to miss him. And I think in that position, the same way they missed Chuck. When they let him go, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to replace him. I say that over and over. Like, it's not as though losing these players or losing these coaches is a death knell. It doesn't mean they're doomed, but you better replace that production. I mean, same thing with Jadeveon Clowney. Is Clowney going to be a 9.5 sack guy again in Carolina this year? I'm guessing probably not, given his history and injuries and all that. But you still need to replace that production if you want your defense to not have this major drop off. So yeah, Geno Stone fits that description. If Geno Stone had returned, he wasn't going to lead the AFC in interceptions again. That was a lot of right player, right place, right time. But you still make the plays. He still made the plays. Credit him. So you need to replace that, and I don't know who that is right now. I mean, I know the Maryland safety Bo Braid, who was an undrafted rookie. They like him. He might make the team. I don't know if that means he's going to play 30 snaps a game. I mean, he's an undrafted rookie. Come on now. So that spot is very much TBD. So, I don't know if it's Jamal Adams, because to me, Jamal Adams at this point in his career is kind of a lesser version of what Kyle Hamilton does. So I don't know if that's really what you're looking for, but they brought him in, and I'm sure, I mean, there are safeties out there. Let's be clear about that. There are safeties, veteran safeties out there that available are waiting for the right opportunity. I'm guessing they want too much money compared to what Eric DaCosta and the Ravens are willing to pay right now, cap-wise. But I'd be surprised if they're going out to Kansas City and we're still having this question as far as who the third safety is going to be. I think you're going to see them bring in a vet at some point. Might not be right now. Might be the third week of August, like they did with Jadeveon Clowney. But I think that's absolutely a spot they need to address and fortify, because you want to have as much flexibility as you can possibly have moving around Kyle Hamilton. And you need a third safety to make that tenable. You need that third safety to have that kind of flexibility.
By the way, all the scumbag owners got together this week, and this is big news, Luke. They're going to have an 18-game schedule. We've only known this for 15 years, right? Like, I could go back to Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterbacks and him taking the, when the movie came out about head trauma and the Pittsburgh doctor, and that's been a dozen years now, right? That they were always going to do it this way. There was all the way they were going to fix the preseason was by doing away with it, right? Because they couldn't figure out how to have halftime concerts. They couldn't figure out how to get people there. In a lot of places, people would just say, I'm not even going to buy season tickets if you're going to screw me and make me buy two more meaningless games, not to mention the Brazil games and the Germany games and the Mexico games. And they'll be in Australia or Japan before it's all over, probably, although they're having a lot of fun in Europe and making a lot of money there. And there's interest. There's legitimate interest there. This part of scheduling 16 versus 18,
odd teams. It's sort of like that year we had six teams in our division and other divisions had four back when we moved here. They were going to be 32. And the same way that baseball, by the way, I was in Vegas last week. The first thing that the Uber driver said, the baseball stadium's going right over there. And by the way, Marvin says hello too. Speaking of changes in the Las Vegas Raiders, it's weird going to Vegas and seeing Raiders stuff everywhere too. It's a little strange. And going to LA and seeing it everywhere there too. And they're not even the team there. I did see a dude in the airport with all Chargers gear, an old fella. He had a Charger hat, Charger jacket, Charger shirt, flying out of LA. And I'm thinking, I always text Joe Ortiz and said, they're catching on out here at this point. But 18 games, this was in eighth grade. I had Mrs. Simpkins. She was my social studies teacher. You didn't teach social studies. You taught like regular school. And she taught me about something called manifest destiny. It was our destiny to get to California. It was always their destiny to play 18 games. It's always been their destiny to play the Super Bowl in late February, to extend it. And everybody hates the preseason. Maybe coaches could make a case that they want to have it, but it wouldn't be John Harbaugh, even though he wins them all the time. The 18-game schedule, do you have anything on that other than, yeah, it was going to happen, and the Players Association was going to get stuck up their rectum, because that's pretty much what's happened.
Well, I mean, at the same time, the Players Association, what have they taken a stand for? And look, I mean, seriously,
didn't what they need? They need Don Fehr and Marvin Miller to come back.
Right. I mean, do you really think – and look, I'm not saying this at all to be complimentary to management, but do you really think if players – actually dug their heels in the sand and said, no, we're not doing that. And look, going to 18 games, there is a CBA that still is going to be, you know, the 17 game schedule was baked into this CBA. 18 games, that's a different story. But that said, owners will throw a bone, probably not big enough, but the NFLPA will take it anyway. And we'll be talking about this at least. I don't think it's imminent, but it's going to happen in the next few years, it feels like, I guess. But, you know, until the NFLPA really takes a stand on issues that matter, you know, I look at what they gained in the last CBA and, you know, what are you really trying to accomplish? You know, you do have a lot of power. If you did say, we're not playing, we're going on strike, and these TV deals suddenly are sitting there and you don't have players.
Couldn't do anything about Kaepernick. They took a player and destroyed his life, destroyed his career for literally doing what you do in church every Sunday, take a knee. And like the players, the next person that comes along out, it's kind of like the media all standing up for, they didn't stand up for me either. So whatever these guys do, they're going to do unless lawyers or bigger money or the American government and Congress gets in the way. And that's in any case, that's $600 million for you. By the way, when I flew in and out of LA, I fly right over SoFi. I was at, you know, I've seen what they've done in building this gigantic monstrosity. I was literally standing there 48 hours ago from nothing and putting two teams in LA. Nobody thought that was a good idea. Certainly the Chargers guy probably thinks it's a better idea there in San Diego, all things being equal, but they do whatever they want to do. And this 18-game schedule thing, just to see it as a headline, there are some people saying, really? And then I'm saying, like, they've been heading toward this for 15 years. This was always going to be their destiny.
Yeah, I mean, the first time that they talked about it, I mean, it was talked – when was the 18-game schedule first talked about? I mean, probably over a decade now.
Yeah, it was 2009, 10, 11, if you go back.
We went to 17. It's going to stay at 17 at least for a little while here, and then it'll go to
18. 17 was always goofy. We're not even used to saying 14 and 3 or 13.
Yeah, I know. Just think it'll get even weirder then. Once you finally get used to that, it'll go to 18. But I'll say this, and it's not happening anytime soon. Let's be very clear about that. I mean, Mark, we're now more than a decade since Mark Cuban famously said, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, right? Talking about this product. But at some point in time, and look, it might be 20 years from now, the NFL is going to ruin the scarcity principle that they have just made a killing off of, the exclusivity of their product that they have just made a killing off of. Because when you're starting to play Christmas Day games on Wednesday afternoons, do not tell me that it stops at 18 games. I become more and more convinced you're going to see the NFL move in a direction that long term, and again, this might be 20 years from now. This might be when you're retired and I'm on my way to being retired as a sports media guy. 25 years from now, who
knows? They've already retired me. I'm not really a media member. Ask them.
But the point would be they want to get to a point where they're having a game every single day of the week throughout the course of the season. And it would take a lot of scheduling. It would take a lot of short weeks and a lot of player safety compromises that they don't care about.
And I wonder how that would really help them financially. How would that really help?
I would really wonder at you get to a certain point in time that it's just not that special anymore. Now, I've been wrong about this because I've said this for years now, and I'm not the only one who said this. I'm not talking out of turn here. Thursday Night Football is a terrible product. I'm not even talking about the player safety aspect of it. The games are routinely terrible. I don't enjoy watching it. And you know what? I generally don't watch Thursday Night Football. Look, my brother has a Prime account, so it's not an issue for me.
I steal my kids, but yes.
I think I turned Thursday Night Football on maybe 3 or 4 times all last season. Point is, the NFL feeds you a you-know-what sandwich, and fans continue to eat it no matter what. So guess what the NFL continues to say? Well, we're going to continue to feed you more and more of that, but we don't really care about the quality of it. And that's where we go back to what's happened now with 17 games, and the injury factor, and teams running on fumes at the end of the year. How do you think it's going to be when you tack on another game to that reality? How many more quarterbacks and key players are going to be
missing?
Well,
the other part of this is I had the owner run from me on the deck 5 weeks ago. If I were to even think about asking a question like that, they might take your press pass because I asked. You know, you can't even ask the owner what's going on with his own franchise that we just gave him $600 million for. So if it's critical, it's critical. But at some point, the ownership of all of this, when you own the team and you're a billionaire and you get all of this, you need to answer these questions. And yeah. From my perspective as a media member, from my perspective as a lifetime PSL owner, a person that spent a lot of money doing this, a person that still is in this every day trying to answer questions at the pool for fans, when there are Raven representatives around the pool who can't answer those questions. Oh, it's not my job. I just sell suites. I just sell this. I just put the football team together. I just run the brand. Everybody's got their own little thing. Right. But the real picture is there are monkeys behind this with the strings controlling all of this, Goodell. And the 18-game thing popped up this week as a fait accompli. And it is, right? It's a manifest destiny. This will happen. And nothing will get in its way because the only thing that could get in its way is the NFLPA, and they won't.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's a matter of when. I'm not convinced that it's imminent because there is a CBA and the 17 games was baked into that. 18 is a different story. So we'll see. I'm guessing there's a way to get it done sooner than later, though, if they really want to. And the NFLPA, like I said, doesn't seem willing to want to dig their heels in on very much. At the very least, hopefully they get a lot of money to make it work. But look, what I mentioned as far as the exclusivity of the product, I'm talking years and years from now because the NFL continues to be too big to fail. And they can put on lousy games on Thursday night. And you know what? Everyone still watches it. So the joke's on us. That's what I tell people all the time whenever they complain about, you know, whether it's the NFL. You know me, I'm a pro wrestling guy. You know, what complain about WWE, whatever it is, if you're going to continue to watch it, you're complicit with it. So, you know, people complain about Wednesday afternoon Christmas games. Yes, I'll be watching the Ravens on Christmas Day, even though it's going to take me away from family, you know, being with my family. I'll be there, but I won't be there mentally because I'll be watching the game. But, you know, everyone will still watch and everyone still watches. And look, it is wildly popular, and I play fantasy football, and people gamble on this, and they have their favorite teams, and they still go to games, and look, it's too big to fail. But at some point in time, if they continue down this road, because they get 18 games, what's going to happen then, Nestor?
Well, how do we 20?
How do we get to 19? You know, how do we get to 20? I mean, at some point in time, there will be a breaking point. It's not happening anytime soon because the numbers and the ratings – speak for themselves compared to every other event that's on television, sporting event or
non-sport. One more game to get your quarterback killed so you can't play in January, right?
The point is, at some point in time, you reach a breaking point with that, And you reach a breaking point with people saying, okay, this is now too much. This is now, you know, I love pizza. I love chocolate pudding. You know, whatever you want, dessert, whatever unhealthy food that you love to eat, that you want to eat. You love it, but would you love it as much if you're having it every single day for every single meal? And the NFL at some point will hit that threshold. As I said, it might be 30 years from now, but they're certainly not going to slow down. And to your point, the 18-game schedule is the next thing on the agenda. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily happening next year, but it's going to be happening at some point here. And there's nothing anyone is going to do to stop it, including the NFLPA. I just hope for the players' sake that they get paid a whole lot more to now put another game on the schedule where they're going to be in harm's way. And you hope that enough quarterbacks and enough of the star players are upright, as we're now going to be playing the conference championship game, what, in early February. And now, you know, that will lead to a Super Bowl President's Day weekend. So,
well, for those challenged with math, at least we get back to even numbers. We can be 9-9 on the campaign instead of 8-9. Luke Jones is Luke at Baltimore, BaltimorePositive.com and Luke at WNST.net, I should say, to find him. You can find him out on social media. You can find me anywhere through Memorial Day weekend. We're going to be talking football. We're going to be talking baseball. There'll be some best of. And Luke, I don't know if you noticed or not, but in the overnight on Wednesday night, we launched a new website at BaltimorePositive.com. So go check that out. I'll have Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I learned a little while ago we're going to be at Cooper's and Sláinte for Fleet Week. We're going to be at Coco's. We're going to be at Pappas. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to be at State Fair, and we're going to be back at Fadley's giving away the Pac-Man scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. Big thanks to Luke and everybody this week for hanging in as we get through the holiday here. The Orioles will start winning some games, I hope. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.